And that's the happy music that brings you back to another week of Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See, and I'm here with the Pop Culture Happy Hour gang. How's everybody?
Excellent.
Oh, fantastic.
Let's go around the table the other way. Glenn, why don't you tell everybody who you are?
I'm Glenn Weldon. I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And Trey, how about you?
I'm Trey Graham. I'm the movies editor at NPR.org.
And last but certainly not least, Stephen, who are you?
Actually, probably least. I'm Stephen Thompson.
Oh, I don't want to say anything.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm Stephen Thompson with NPR Music.
And we're going to start off this week with a project of Glenn's. Now, Glenn, we wanted to read a couple of, let's say, things from your genre this week. So why don't you tell us what you picked for us to read and why you chose these particular two items for us to read?
Sure. Mike actually suggests that we all read a comic together, and I could have picked some kind of high-minded indie thing, and maybe if we ever do this again, this experiment again, maybe we will go down that road. There's a lot of stuff that's classic and very NPR ready, like your Mouse, your Persepolis, your Fun Home. But all that stuff's kind of A, long, and B, heavy, and we have Thompson to consider. So
I was hoping that it was going to be a Ziggy comic.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that it was going to have multiple pages and whatnot.
Thing, yes. One battle. A family circus. So I wanted to go lighter. I wanted to go something that's not particularly taxing. And then I thought, let's make this experiment really experimental. Let's take you three normals.
You three dullards.
No. You non-comics folk. And dunk you headfirst into the turbid waters.
Turbid is a good word.
Turbid bathwater warm waters of the comics mainstream, which means as much as people like me always are on about the fact that, comics are more than superheroes, that superheroes are just one genre within
Heard it's a medium and not a genre.
It's a medium.
Yes, comics. I've never heard anybody say that.
Superheroes are a genre. Comics are a medium. There's
That's
a lot
what
more.
I have heard.
But we have to admit that if somebody's reading a monthly comic, 9 times out of 10, I mean, literally 90% of the people who read monthly comics are reading superheroes. So it is, it's the dominant genre. It's the reality television to what television is. It's there. It's something we have to kind of deal with, well, at least some of us. You people never have to, but I think they're fun, and I wanted to see what happens when three normals meet exactly where the current state of superhero comics is. So I picked two books. Now, let me just say to the Marvel zombies out there that to do the mainstream, I actually went to my comic shop expecting to pick up a book called Spider-Girl because a new book and it's a new character. I figured what better way to do it. I was also thinking about the book Osborn, which also came out last Wednesday. Both of those books were sold out at my local comic shop. So
it's Osborn. What is
Please tell me it's about Ozzy.
It's not. It's about Norman Osborn, the Green Goblin, who is now a big muckety-muck.
Sure. I like how they both go, oh, like they're like, oh, sure. Oh, that's it. Of
no,
course.
I've seen this. I've seen the Spider-Man.
He's in jail. It's a whole. It's basically a jailhouse sort of genre. It's like Caged Heat.
Shawshank Redemption.
It's like Shawshank Redemption. So I could have done those. They were sold out. I went to the clerk at the store, asked her. Yes, exactly. Her opinion, and she suggested that the Marvel Universe is a lot more sort of tangled up together than the DC Universe is right now, so maybe a Batman book might be a good place to start. So, in fact, there was a book that came out last Wednesday called Batman: The Return, which basically takes all the stuff that the writer Grant Morrison has been doing for the past 5 years on the Batman section of the DC Universe.
So he's the guy I have to blame for this
experience. Hold on. We're getting to that.
For Pete's sake.
And it kind of says, okay, everything that's happened to Batman in the last 5 years. He was given an entitled snot-nosed son called Damian. He was driven nuts. He was sent careening through time. And now he is back. While he was gone, Dick Grayson became Batman. And Damian, the snot-nosed entitled punk, became Robin. So all that's been going on for the last 5 years. Now this book says, okay, we're going to clear the table. And this is what's going to set up for the next 4 or 5 years of what's going to go happen in the Batman section of the DC Universe. We should note that there are about, in a given month, 10 to 11 books, I think, that deal with some aspect of the Batman universe. So this is the centerpiece.
I'm sorry, what are the other ones?
Well,
I'm trying to get a sense. Is it like, I'm not asking you to rattle them all off like state capitals. I'm just saying, like, is it that there's like a Joker book and there's a... Am I thinking the right thing?
There's not
thing,
a Joker
or?
Book. There's a... I don't want to get this wrong because I will get letters.
From my mother.
Yes. There's several books, some focusing on Robin, some of them focusing on Batgirl, some of them focusing on a bunch of different characters who kind of are set in Gotham, some set in Arkham Asylum.
I just want you to understand, I'm engaged. I'm engaged
I understand
in this. I just want you to know. I'm actively listening.
So there is two books that we picked. One is called Batman the Return, which is a one-shot. Ideally, it's a done-in-one. Ideally, it's supposed to stand alone and just reorient you into where Batman is going. The other one is called Batgirl, which takes a character, Stephanie Brown, who is, in fact, if you're counting at home, at least the third, possibly the fourth, depending on which reference book you use, the fourth Batgirl. So in coming to these, what I wanted to do was not dwell too much on the specifics of the particular books, because I don't think people who haven't read these books will be remotely interested in that. But what I'd like you guys to do, and then I will shut up.
You're welcome, public.
That's right. Is just to compare and contrast these two books, talk a little bit about the barrier to entry that you guys felt, talk a little about, you know, your general interest level in this, and then maybe whether your expectations coming to books like this were either reinforced or confounded.
So at the end of this, we're going to come out of this like comic books, pro or con.
We're
going to
say...
just judging them all
the idea
on this
basis.
Just in terms of... Let's talk about superhero comics in relation to this. So, okay. Stephen Thompson. What
you'd like me to start?
I would.
Both books felt compelled to try to orient the reader in the universe that they're laying out. Mm-hmm. So the first several pages of each seem like they're trying to give a dope like me an accessible entry point into what they're doing. I thought the Batgirl book was particularly witty in the way that it did that.
I thought it was cute and self-deprecating and funny.
Yeah, where it's sort of sketching out in kind of adorable cartoony fashion. I was kind of hoping the whole book was going to be drawn like that, with these adorable cartoons, you know, to sort of establish, like, who the hell is Batgirl? Batgirl? And, you know, I found that useful. I will say that both books would have enormously benefited from, if you've ever gotten a greeting card where you open it and then, like, a little music box, like, or, like, the little voice, you know, sings to you or whatever. If you had gotten a Weldonian voiceover that was Batman is a book. Oh, I can't do it. Suddenly.
Footnotes in Weldon's voice is what these needed.
Mm-hmm. But it needed Glenn Weldon to do a voiceover of what has happened up to that point, which, you know, like in 60 seconds. So you open it up and it says, "Welcome to the Batman universe." And
it sounds nothing like
it. No, it's terrible. Where did my Weldon voice go?
Terrible.
It's got to be ramped
up. Take consolation, Stephen. That's exactly what I sound like in my head.
Anywho.
The Batman The Return book, I felt about it a little bit the way I felt about a lot of scenes in The Dark Knight movie, that it was a little bit dark and inscrutable in spots, you know, where there was a lot of, you know, a figure in the shadows fighting with another figure in the shadows as 9 speech balloons circled around it.
Some of which sound like Drunk Hulk. The one guy talks exactly like Drunk Hulk.
Tractor
talks exactly like Drunk Hulk. Hello, Drunk Hulk. I miss you. Love you. Yeah, I sort of got confused about why I was meeting that guy.
I did too.
And I will say, my big thing with these was not the story, which I thought was engaging and, you know, especially knowing that it's part of a longer story and all that. But I was reading them and I kept going, who's talking?
You know,
I know it's
a device.
It's a device, and I know that it is a result of the fact that I don't read these regularly, that I'm not as oriented to what the conventions are. But there were moments when I would look at them, and I literally read both of them twice, because the first time through, I would kind of get confused about who was talking and who they were talking to, and there were times when somebody would address somebody else. And like in the Batgirl one, there's a lot of conversation with like the home base.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. That one is very unclear when the narrator is talking versus...
And it took a while to figure out. And then you have these kind of random boxes of text that aren't anybody talking, but they are maybe internal monologue, and that they're maybe outside.
You people clearly are not informed about the conventions.
That's exactly.
It's just very. It's tragic.
What sort of speech impediment does this particular comic book nerd have?
I'm insulted on behalf of my people.
Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is, I think this is part of what you mean when you say barriers to entry. Part of it is just it takes some time to get used to what they look like and how to follow, because I am used to kind of reading in a more linear style, and the combination of trying to navigate the panels, which honestly, if you're not used to it, it's not even always clear what order you're supposed to be reading them in.
Yep.
The combination of that and the tendency of text, like in the Batgirl one, at the beginning, there's sort of, like I say, a mix of internal monologue and actual scene dialogue, and it's sometimes hard to figure out. And then there's some point where there are like three different things going on. There's people talking.
There's internal monologue.
There's internal monologue, and there's narration. Yeah. And I sort of, it took me a while to catch the drift. So part of it was just the logistics.
Very briefly, what you're picking up on is the lack, the utter lack of the thought balloon, which has not been a part of mainstream comics for years. It has become those narrative boxes. Mm-hmm. And the way they cue you in on who's talking is they color code it. So if it's Robin speaking, it's red and yellow. And if it's Batman, it's blue and
black. Did not pick up. There should be there should be a key.
Yeah.
Like on a map.
But that's something I hadn't thought about. But you're absolutely right. The, without the thought balloon going back to the person who is thinking the thought, it can be very confusing.
Yeah.
I personally found the Batgirl a lot easier to follow than the Batman and the Return. But you remember how I've been heard to say that one of the things I like about theater is that it leaves gaps for your imagination to fill? I take it all back. I don't like that anymore.
Suddenly don't like it.
When it's, you know, these comics need to do more work.
Ah, okay.
I definitely understand that. I definitely felt like there were places where I felt like I was trying to fill in too much. I was trying to guess too much about what was going on. But I was never sure how much of that was just because it's the first one I had ever read. Like the drop-in of the gray ghost guy. I was like,
who was that and where did he come from?
And why did that happen?
Two things. When I read my very first comic book as a wee tot, and it was, I think it was a Fantastic Four, and the whole thing was referring back to things that happened in previous issues, and like it was like, in 712, said Stan Lee, check blast-ish, you know, all that stuff. What that did to me was it sort of said, it gauged me, and it said, well, there's a whole universe here you're not exposed to, so seek it out, go, explore.
Go, spend your money.
And what I think you're reacting to is this whole thing of, well, there's this whole universe here, and I don't feel interested in seeking
it. I actually think that these are not as welcoming. These, I don't think, aside from that first sequence in the Batgirl, that these do invite you in a particularly welcoming way.
Well, there's I mean, to be real, and this is one of the things that's happening in comics right now, I mean, these are not written for you. These are written for me with this whole sort of internalized lifetime's worth, and that's a big problem, I think. I think that's a huge problem
the future of this. I would take issue with what you said, that it was a lack of interest. It was genuinely not being sure how much you're not getting. Because you read it, and you don't really know whether... Does this seem weird and random because it's weird and random and not that well written? Or does it seem weird and random because I don't know what's going on and I don't...
Because it's an inside
joke.
Don't,
right. It's not a lack of interest. I actually sort of found it fun. And once I got into reading them, I did enjoy them. But I am so accustomed to at least having a starting place to go back to.
Right.
Even if you come in the middle of a show, you know, of a TV show, for example, if you come in the middle of the third season, you know it's the middle of the third season. You have a theoretical starting point, and you know how much you've missed.
Right.
And in these, it's like they're rebooted and redone so many times that you don't even really know where you are in this particular sequence.
The,
so
internal logic varies quite a bit from writer to writer within these worlds. And I was actually going to make the comparison to television shows also from the standpoint of some shows, each episode is extremely self-contained as opposed to shows that become completely inscrutable to, you know, because they're so serialized. And, you know, so consequently, their audience is somewhat inherently niche and shrinking over the course of the life
of the
show.
See the event.
Right, which is not to, you know, which is not to say that either of those things is necessarily better or worse.
Right.
But.
Well, I think there's some technical issues here. In the back of Batman the Return, you can see the script that Grant Morrison supplied to the artist.
Yeah, which was neat.
I liked
that. And there's a scene where Batman pushes this dude off a tower and then has to defuse a bomb and while they're falling down off this tower. And I couldn't tell. I couldn't orient to where some of these things were in relation to each other.
This was where I started to check out of the comic, and that's like on the second page, right?
It is.
Because he's falling off a tower, and he's trying to defuse a bomb, and he deploys airbags. Right. And I was like, all right, I don't... Where did the airbags come from?
Right.
How did we get on? You know, it was so strange, so quickly. And I was looking forward to this assignment because I haven't read comics regularly since I was a little bitty kid. But
thing an artist can do is to kind of, you need this stuff to be clear. You need to be led from one panel to the other. Without that, it's a montage. It's not going to help.
I think this is actually potentially a good quality, or at least a neutral quality, but it I was really struggling to sort of get a feel for the tone, mm-hmm. how silly it was being versus how grave it was trying to be. Because Steven sort of talked about how it has this, the Batman book mm-hmm. has this gravitas, this sort of very dark, lots of teeth and blood and, you know, mm-hmm. it's very...
viscera it's hanging from fangs.
Viscera yeah. hanging from fangs and so forth. But at the same time, there is that Tractor.
T-R-A-K-T-I-R.
Tractor.
Drunk Hulk.
Tractor yeah. talking like Drunk Hulk.
Yeah.
And certain parts of it that you feel like, okay, surely this is campy on purpose. But it was hard for me to wrap my brain around what exactly the tone was. And again, I feel like it's such a small sample
yeah.
that I don't necessarily judge the whole thing based on that.
The entire medium.
Sure. Right. Well, that's one of the things I wanted to get to here, which is to take two books which are very closely related and show you that there's mm-hmm. a marked difference mm-hmm. in tone here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. That we can't just lump all superhero comics into
oh,
one
sure.
sort of yeah. thing. That even within these two books, which are very related, I mean, Batgirl is featured in Batman the Return.
Right. Right.
And it's she's dealt with in a totally different mm-hmm. way. It's a combination of the writing, but also the art and how they're dealt mm-hmm. with. Grant Morrison wrote Batman the Return. He's written a lot of Batman stuff these last few years. He's known for just throwing out ideas. And when he channels them well, you have something like All-Star Superman, which is a great book. It's a great 12-issue, boom, boom, boom. It engages this sort of sense of whimsy and wonder. When he is not as directed as I don't think he is here, you get this idea that there's all these things happening at the periphery that I don't get. Which is why I wish, in retrospect, I had picked up Batman Incorporated to give you guys, because that's also a new start. That's basically a series which is launched last Wednesday to say he's taking crime fighting global. He's setting up, he's franchising, basically.
I was going
to
say, he's Batman Incorporated is the thing that he's setting up.
Well, that's the storyline we're working toward in this, right?
Right, right exactly. Right. So you're supposed to read Batman the Return first and then Batman the Incorporated.
And he's going to go hire a bunch of other Batmen and yep. Robins and set up a bunch of other Batcaves.
What you guys were talking about as a darkness and a seriousness and a grimness, I read as self-importance and a grandiosity
certainly,
in the tone that just
certainly a risk.
Was terribly off-putting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, he's incorporating a lot of elements from the Nolan films. I mean, the Batman right. looks a lot like the Nolan films.
Yeah. I felt like it was... The two were definitely related.
Right. He has been doing stuff that's just crazy off the wall. He has been... His approach to Batman is to say every story about Batman ever written is somehow true. So during his run, you've revisited really goofy things from the Silver Age, where rocket ships and giant clowns, and then you also have this very, very grim...
Clowns.
Yeah, this very, very grim
sharp
thing. He's trying to capture it all, and when he was doing it right, it's a lot of fun. And when he doesn't do it right, it's just grim and bloody and... There's a sheik in there that I don't really know what he's doing.
There is a terrible moment where I think a guy talks to himself, mm-hmm. calling himself by name the first time you see him, and even refers to himself as us.
Yeah.
And the first time I read it, it was so confusing because I thought, so he's with whoever this guy is, and then later I'm looking for where's that guy, and then they refer back to the same guy and call him by that name, and I say, no, that's not him, that's the guy he was with, and I went so far as to go back and forth trying to look at what he was wearing, trying to figure out, where's the other guy? And it turned out there was no other guy.
Right.
It was literally the first time you see this guy in the book. It's like if I were first seen in a comic book saying, I guess we did okay, Linda. Like, if you first saw me that way...
That is actually how I talked to myself.
Then you would start to say, who is she talking to?
Yep.
So there were a couple of just basic story things that I thought were a little bit difficult to follow. But other than that, I mean, I enjoyed the... You know, the tone was much easier for me to get a handle on. It's
right.
much more traditional comic book-y feel to
sure.
me.
So to wrap up, I mean, you all had going into this some idea of what superhero comic books are like.
Mm-hmm.
What did this say to you? Did it reinforce your expectations? Did it say, this is pretty much what I thought it was? Or were you surprised?
I would say that I was somewhat surprised by some of the complexity of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have definitely been aware that there were darker and...
Sure.
and you know, I mean, the Batgirl is almost like a superhero version of an Archie comic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has a really classic comic booky, not only feel, but also look.
Mm-hmm.
And a bit more lightness to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
I knew that intellectually, but it definitely was very interesting to see how, like you said, it's the same universe and it's the same kind of character, but it plays out completely differently based on the approach of the... So I found it educational. I don't know that it was expectation busting, but it was... Mm-hmm. you know, it was interesting to me.
I feel like it's brought me closer to Glenn.
Mission accomplished. Trey?
I was a little surprised to discover how topical the Batman book in particular was trying to be. I don't remember superhero comics being like that when I was a kid, but they may have been, given the evidence of the Muhammad Ali thing you were talking about last week.
In the 40s, you know, you certainly had superheroes fighting the Nazis.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And
yeah.
whatnot, yeah. you know. I have to say, and this is just a totally, just a crass concern, but if this story that's told in Batman the Return unfolds over the course of 5 years, and each issue costs $5.
Well, oh, that's no, the one shot. The one shot costs a little bit more, but yeah, there's a whole other thing that I don't necessarily want to get into today about $2.99 comics, $3.99 comics, how they've kind of redecided they're going to put more ads into certain books, but charge
less in order to lower the price. Because yeah. I would say that one barrier to entry for me, I mean, this is a story that's told, you know, obviously going to be told very, very slowly. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that's just the nature of the medium, and Lord knows, I was raised by two of the world's foremost comic book fans, professional comic book fans, and so I've lived sort of around comic books my whole life. So I'm certainly not new to the medium, but it does seem when you break it down, if you want to be told this story, you know, if you're looking forward to how the story like begins and has a middle and an end, I mean, you're dropping hundreds of dollars to have it be told to you.
Trust me, I know.
In the span of years and years, and really ultimately not an enormous outlay of time. I mean, this book took me, you know, and I didn't scour every word of how the script is translated into the comic, and you're getting a look in the inside. I mean, there certainly are treats and bonuses. So, but if you're just reading the story, it takes about 20 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder somewhat about sort of the cost effectiveness of it compared to if you were to buy entire seasons of a TV show on DVD or movies on DVD or, you know, box sets of a recording artist over the course of a career. Mm-hmm. You know, how this medium compares to other media cost-wise.
Yeah. Well, the other issue is that for a writer like Morrison, who loads his stuff up with so many A stories and B stories and C stories and references to things, you really almost need annotations for some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I find that he reads a lot better all together at once than if I try to go into him, you know, once a month.
And that's really how I prefer, not that I, you know, obviously, as we've established on the show, not that I'm a big reader, but I like to be able to sit down and be told a story, you know, if I want, somewhat in one sitting.
Yeah. Mm. I doubt that I would develop a habit of sitting and reading them once a month, but I definitely would consider, you know, a big
an
book
anthology.
That had it right. Where you could see the whole thing at once. And I know that Trey, as we were about to start taping, Trey was talking about something that had occurred to me also, which is that the ads were actually very distracting to me. Yeah. And I think it has something to do with the fact that the ads are so similar in style
that's
to
right.
the rest
yeah,
of the
you know,
book.
This is a story that's being told in visuals, and they pop these ads in there in the middle
right.
and with no real
right.
signal that
and,
it's
and
an ad.
And they look just like the rest of the book. You do kind of bump into it, and it's sort of like if you were reading, you know, a novel, and every few pages not only was there an ad, but there's an ad that looked like a page of your novel.
Well, fewer and fewer people are buying monthly comics. More and more people are going to trades. More and more people are going to digital downloads. All of this is part of that. You don't get the ads, I don't believe, in the digital downloads. You don't get the ads in trade paperbacks. I mean, I think we're seeing the barriers to entry are very real, and y'all expressed exactly what my instinct was to the barriers to entry here. So, I mean, I think, you know,
but we didn't
I think the writing's on the wall.
But we didn't
there was no mockery.
Mock
you did
your,
not mock. There was threatening of mockery.
No. There's always threatening of mockery.
I was going to say, I have to say, this is probably the least we've ever mocked anything.
I know.
For one thing, I'm terrified of what my mother is going to say.
She's going to take you to the woodshed.
It's certainly less than we mocked college a cappella.
That is true.
All right. We do find ourselves sitting here at Pop Culture Happy Hour, the week of Thanksgiving. And I will say, one of us.
Now you can guess which one.
Does not like gratitude or giving thanks.
All right. Or other human beings.
Or feelings.
Yep.
Or
this morning I wrote to all of y'all and I said, by the way, if you're thinking of changing what's making us happy to the things for which we are thankful, just understand something, please. And that's that words matter. Words have different meanings. And happy is not the same thing as thankful. Happy is one thing. Thankful is a much, much higher bar. So we can't just go trading these words around all higgledy-piggledy.
No
Weldon,
one was saying
Weldon
it's
can
the
achieve
thing.
One and not the other. And so, you know.
Of course it's not the same thing.
This is going to set us down a path. Mark, my words towards schmoopiness and cursive writing and Hallmark cards.
Yes. Who cares? What's wrong with schmoop. That?
Well, I mean, okay, I think we've established happiness, obviously, very fleeting. Gratitude, you've established that it is a higher bar. So, for example, I am happy when Brett Favre eats it in a given football game. But I'm thankful when Brett Favre eats it over the course of an entire football season to the point where his coach is fired.
As long as we acknowledge we just can't plug these words in. All higgledy-piggledy.
No one is saying we're plugging them in higgledy-piggledy.
Except me. I just did.
I'm just glad
gliggledy-wiggledy.
I'm just glad you said higgledy-piggledy.
I think people don't say higgledy-piggledy nearly.
No, they do in this podcast.
In fact, perhaps we need to be grateful for the saying.
Well, I'm happy about it. I don't know if I'm thankful.
That's true. I don't feel gratitude about higgledy-piggledy, but it makes me happy.
Slippery slope.
All right. Do any of you who do like gratitude have anything that you feel grateful about that you'd like to mention? Anyone?
I'm going to let Thompson
and that
go.
Brings us to the end.
Weldon clearly was afraid that this was going to lead us to saying things like, I am thankful for my nephews, who are awesome, by the way, and who listen to the podcast.
Glenn, what do you think of Trey's nephews?
I just tasted my lunch. Just tasted my lunch a little bit.
But in fact, what I'm going to say is that I am thankful for the holiday season.
Because No, you know what?
Because
Glenn
now,
was right.
No. I am thankful for the holiday season because now I have a focus for what is usually a low-grade, free-ranging kind of resentment and misanthropy.
Oh, okay, good.
I mean,
I'm back.
I was in a taxi this morning, and the radio played the Air Supply recording of Sleigh Ride, and I almost leapt out while the damn car was still moving.
All right, this is taking a nice turn.
What's making me happy is hatred.
No, not happy.
No.
Oh, grateful.
Thankful this week. No, seriously, my holiday tradition is quoting Scrooge, and none of that lame, non-committal, bah humbug nonsense.
Non-committal.
Every time I have to review a production of A Christmas Carol, which is pretty much every time I can't blackmail Bob Mondello into doing it for me, I make a point of working in what Scrooge says to his nephew in the opening scene, which is, if I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. And I did not even have to look that up before I came to the studio.
Yeah, I think some of us feel that the pre-ghost Scrooge was onto something.
Mm, yeah. I'm with that guy.
The pre-redemption.
The pre-redemption Scrooge.
Before he had the hallucinations.
So you're saying that the guy who really had the wonderful life was Mr. Potter.
That's right.
he had the most wonderful life.
Rich. Had that accent.
Rich, pushing everyone in, got to name the town after himself.
To name the town.
So that was a wonderful life. And then...
that's what the title's referring to,
stupid angel in the nightgown comes around and messes with everything.
Yeah. Old drunken
messes,
address.
Messes up a perfectly good life that Mr. Potter is having. a wonderful life, if you will.
That's right. That's what I got out of it. I don't know.
You kind of stopped paying attention after a while.
This makes perfect, so now I understand everything.
It should just end right there. He goes home, has some gruel, boom, done.
And then the last shot is like Tiny Tim crying. The end. Merry Christmas.
You know, Trey talks a good game, but as I mentioned to him earlier, he's going to come around to a time and asking me to go fetch him a fat Christmas goose as large as I am. Which, let's agree, is pretty terrifying thought.
All right, so Trey is grateful for the holiday season for giving him a place to dump all his misery, hostility.
Pretty much.
And
so that you can better focus like a laser on the things, on the people who actually make you thankful.
This is true, yes.
So there, Weldon, stick it.
All right, how about you, Thompson? What are you thankful for?
Well, blah, blah, my kids, my family, my friends. I am thankful. Well, the first thing I will say is two examples in which I am thankful for the wonderful holiday tradition of receiving. Two gifts that I have been given in the last week, and that's really what it's all about, people, receiving. A couple weeks ago, received a large box from Scholastic Books, and my initial reaction to receiving said box was, books? It must be a mistake, I said. Open the box, and inside were four copies of Catching Fire and four copies of Mockingjay, the second and third books in the Hunger Games trilogy, which we've been talking about on our little podcast. So some magical angel over at the publishing company saw fit to save me from God forbid, having to buy two more books.
And thus did the book industry give up the only revenue ever going to get from Stephen in its life. The end.
At the same time, the book industry...
Crying Tiny Tim.
The book industry is being single-handedly kept afloat by me and my 9-year-old kid. Thank you very much. But yes, it is true. The other gift that I received was on my desk this morning. For those of you who remember in last week's podcast, I discussed my long and fruitless search for my own copy of the cartoon The Great Toy Robbery.
No.
A wonderful 7-minute cartoon, and I talked of how I looked around and searched online and blah-de-blee, and I could never find it, and so I've settled for YouTube. And I received, wrapped in bubble wrap, a video cassette with a Post-it note attached.
And which I have here in my hand.
Which I have here in my hand. I have here in my hand a Post-it note, and on it is written... this is from one of NPR's music librarians, Allison Leonard. It says, "Hopefully this proves that libraries are awesome. Librarians are superheroes disguised in cardigans. P.S. You officially suck at searching."
So what you're thankful for is abuse from librarians.
You know,
I think that can be arranged.
Anyway, thank
it's
you.
It's a wonderful life.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas, Bedford Falls.
Anyway, thank you to those who made it possible for me to receive gifts without giving them. But also, just last night, we're recording this on Monday, Ms. Linda Holmes and I, in honor of her birthday, went to see the 20th reunion show by a wonderful band that I'm sure, Linda, you would back me up on this. We highly, highly recommend.
We do.
A band called The Frames. If you have not heard The Frames, oh, you must go hear The Frames. I recommend an album called Setlist if you were a newbie looking to check out this band.
If you want to incidentally be friends with Stephen, you have to pretend to like Setlist.
For those who are unfamiliar with The Frames, if you have seen the movie Once, the male lead is Glenn Hansard, who is also the lead singer of The Frames, and that is
with whom we had a wide ranging conversation following this concert.
Yes, so. which was also delightful. And the music of The Frames has a way of sort of figuratively disemboweling and then re-emboweling me in a wonderful way.
The holiday special by Dr.
Wow, I do realize people are listening to this the day after Thanksgiving.
I would like to go for a very simple, very utilitarian thing that I am thankful for. I'm thankful for YouTube, and I'll tell you why.
I thought you were going to say YouTube, like that's, me and Trey.
Yeah, and she's looking at us.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
There's a moment. There's a little moment of uplift.
And, I am thankful for all of you at least like 60% of the time.
Take that.
Yeah, so that's like, not a bad ratio.
So yeah, if there's three of you and I'm grateful for you 2/3 of the time, then I'm grateful for two, you know, like two of you.
Almost two of us.
Overall, if you average it out over everyone, then I'm grateful for two out of the three of you. Anyway, so
it's a tremendous honor.
Yeah. I am grateful for YouTube because I continue to be delighted. Today I actually received, and I'm sure that you will hear more about this, but there is someone at NPR who asked me to help locate cute animal videos. And so this was what I was
they knew
doing.
Which side of their bread was
right. They did. They knew.
Bailiwick.
They knew where Good to go, heavens. And it was help find cute animal videos. And so I was sitting there finding cute animal videos.
And getting paid for it.
Exactly. Uh-huh. For not only cute animal videos with which you may be familiar, such as various ones of cats trying to jump onto things and falling down.
Maru in the Box.
Maru in the Big Box is one of the ones that I offered. But also one that I recently fell in love with in which a tortoise slowly takes over a large pillow from a puppy. And the tortoise just gradually works its way up onto the pillow in this wonderful way. And the puppy gradually just has to give ground. It's like the ultimate, you know,
slow and steady.
Slow and steady. It's the demonstration of perseverance and the importance thereof.
That is how I, by the way, intend to have consumed my Thanksgiving dinner by the time this podcast is published.
Exactly. But I also enjoy YouTube for its I would salute its wedding dance videos, which I never grow tired of people either being exuberant and joyful, or in the alternative, embarrassing and cringeworthy.
Right.
Good. Both good. I enjoy its unauthorized clips of old TV shows, which are totally illegal and no one is supposed to have. But that's
they
where
are
you,
wrong.
That's where you go if you need your Golden Girls clip. But, you know, to the point where if I can't find something, I get very, very frustrated because I expect to be able to locate almost anything.
Almost anything, yeah. Can I second this recommendation? Because actually this is something we talked about a little bit last week when we were talking about pop culture searches and digging them up. It was kind of one of the reasons we wanted to address that topic. I mentioned last week the five Mahler songs of Friedrich Rückert. And I talked about it as a thing that I had been searching for a long time and not been able to find. Well, if we cut it out of the podcast, if you're not hallucinating because you didn't actually hear this part of the conversation.
I think I actually tuned out that portion. I didn't know that it hadn't run in the...
Recruit leaders. What?
Anyway, we cut it out because apparently it had been a couple of years since I went searching on YouTube and someone had uploaded them a little more than 2 years ago. So I spent most of the afternoon the next day
sending us those links.
sending you those links and watching them and just being sort of overjoyed to discover this thing on YouTube.
I enjoy YouTube. I am grateful for its breadth.
Well, I look forward to that.
Stupidity.
I look forward to that website catching on.
Yeah.
On the basis of our recommendation.
Yeah, somebody should buy that.
Exactly.
A good startup
exactly.
Right there.
I'm just hoping, you know, those kids will make it, you know. I just figure with a little help, you never know. Anyway. You didn't. You
I
wanted to say.
No.
Oh, I thought you wanted
oh,
it.
Oh, I thought
heaven
Glenn.
For Finn. No,
oh,
no, no.
Heaven thank I, God. Well.
No, I got something I'm thankful for. I'm going to come out and say it. Thankful
wow.
for. And that is... A few weeks ago in Entertainment Weekly, Ken Tucker wrote an essay about the 10th and final season of the show Smallville, in which he said, you know, it's really finding its feet, and it's now that there's an
it's
ending.
Finally catching on.
After 10 years. Well, trust me.
So
it's been a long slog.
No,
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that you are thankful for the words in that sentence, and final.
No, we're not.
Oh,
here's
okay,
the thing, right. And we're just going to keep this on the mainstream superhero tip. Why not? Why change now? He talked about how they're starting to reveal things finally, and things are kind of, there's a momentum building up. What he neglected to mention is the thing for which I am thankful, which is that this 10th and final season of Smallville is, and I will keep this clean for NPR, bat poop crazy. It is guano crazy. It
guano
is bananas. It is nuts. They are throwing characters from all walks of the DC universe into this thing, higgledy-piggledy. And,
yes!
I mean, a few weeks back, Lois Lane became Isis. Anybody remember Isis
yes.
from 1975?
Oh, my God. I used to watch Isis every Saturday morning.
Shazam and Isis.
That's right.
I mean, what?
What?
How did
my parents not know?
Yeah, I know, right? And, you know, I bailed out of the show, like in the second season, because it was nothing but Monster of the Week. And it was really sticking to the then WB formula of 30-year-olds playing teenagers who are staring into each other's eyes and having lots of angst. And that's continued. They've gotten people like Erica Durance to play Lois Lane. They've gotten people like Justin Hartley to play Green Arrow. These are actors who can do wisecrack. They can crack wise. Tom Welling, who is the guy in the center of the show, cannot crack wise. And when he tries to stare into Lois Lane's eyes in a smoldering, lustful way, let me just put it this way. If Tom Welling were to look at me the way he looks at Lois Lane, Erica Durance, I would not say, "Kiss me, you mad fool." My reaction would be, "What, do I have something on my face? What? Is it peanut butter? What are you looking at?" There is nothing coming from
this
guy.
He's very Dawson-y.
This is the thing.
Yeah.
It used to be Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
Now they're throwing all kinds of crazy stuff. It's really deeply geeky. So they're upping the fanboy appeal with lots of big explosions and awesome set pieces, but they're not forgetting the fangirls and the fanboys who like boys. Because the last episode featured a shirtless Green Arrow and a shirtless Aquaman straining against their restraints.
Shirtless Aquaman.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was memorable. But if you remember, the DNA of this show has had shirtless dudes straining against their restraints in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the very first promotional image of the show was Tom Welling shirtless up on a scarecrow thing straining against his retreat. So, I mean, they know They know what side their bread is buttered. So yes, once Dawson's Creek, now Deeply Geeky.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So you are grateful?
I'm thankful for it. I'm thankful for shirtless Aquaman scenes. Yes. Come outside.
So this entire thing about
how... I wouldn't
how
say it at the dinner table on Thursday.
This entire thing about
how... the peas and pectorals. Not
thankfulness really raises the bar.
Like, yes, right. It's good to know.
To the point
it was a
where
complete
it's,
sham.
It's good to know where that bar actually is. Yeah, the shirtless Aquaman is what you felt was going to lead us down a terrible path.
You were just afraid that we were going to talk about love.
Yes, thank you, Stephen. Stephen knows me.
I would never.
Dude, I feel betrayed. I brought hatred for Christmas.
That's right.
And
right.
You brought the WB.
You should have actually, Glenn. You should have said.
True.
You should have said you were grateful for nephews. just to recalibrate us properly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Grateful
well.
For us.
Oh, good grief! I mean, I think it's safe to say that we are all grateful for everyone who has joined us and been our pal on Pop Culture Happy Hour. All of our lovely. You know, listeners and correspondents and folks who have sent us.
Correspondents. I like to think of Barry Hardyman as our Judith Krantz correspondent.
But, yes. but folks
Take
who
line
have...
London.
Still no pants. But people who have sent us correspondence. I mean, people who have sent us Chictopus drawings.
And yes, and at some point
true.
We will get
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
and
too.
Requested recaps.
It has been pointed out to me, by the way, that Chictopus apparently exists as a character on some show on the Cartoon Network.
No.
Hmm. Yeah, and was saying like, oh, your kids didn't create Chictopus. They saw it on... I was there. Chictopus just kind of sprung up. I think animal hybrids, they're somewhat limited by the scope of the animal kingdom.
Yeah.
But anyway, I still love Chictopus.
That's very silly.
My kids are still delighted every time somebody sends in a drawing of Chictopus, and those will be shared with the world, perhaps as our holiday gift to you.
So I think it's safe to say that we are all grateful for everybody who has, sent us their nice, kind words on Twitter or email or whatever. And,
absolutely.
And, of course, Barry, who is not here today. And, and our lovely producer, Mike Katziff, who is not on the mic today.
I'm enormously grateful.
Oh, yeah.
Who is a genius.
Mike Katziff.
Mike, who makes us sound...
Without whom this show could not exist.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Could
not
true.
Exist. And if it did exist, we would all sound way more stupid.
Mm-hmm. There would be so much more nose-picking.
There would be so much more nose-picking. And of course, I am thankful... I am thankful for all of you.
Aww.
Well, the old clock on the wall, what does it say, Linda?
The old clock on the wall says it is indeed the end of Pop Culture Happy Hour, and thanks everybody for being here as always.
Always
Thank
a pleasure.
You. Thank you.
You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, STEPHEN. You can follow Trey at Treygram, which Stephen likes to render as
Trey with an E, then Graham like the cracker.
You can follow Glenn at GH Weldon, that's WELDON. You can follow our producer, Mike Katziff, who we were just, giving some. Such high praise at Mike Katziff, that's KATZIF. And it's Mike's band, Hello Come In, who provides our in and out music. Once again, happy Thanksgiving. Have a wonderful rest of your holiday weekend, and we will see you next week.